piece here. This piece will take us really to the middle of the next page, I guess I'm going to call it. It's arbitrary, of course, when you want to divide it up. But we're talking about David HaMelech here. We're going to start out by refocusing on the midnight business. We're going to start wondering how David knew about midnight. That'll be the beginning of the topic. We're going to have a big version about the David's Seder Yom and how his life went and his nights and his days and an issue. And then we'll come back to talking about the midnight issue again. So that'll probably take us to the rest of the evening today and to, I don't know, a third of the way down the next Amud. Okay? So, here's how it starts. You recall we said that David got up at midnight. Right? Either he was up half up already, but by midnight he got up proper and he would. The pasuk says that that he would get up to praise Hashem. Akum lahol, it says chatzos laila, at midnight akum, I would get up lahodos lach al mishpatei tzidkecha, to praise you on the thank you for your righteous judgments. So the Gemara now picks up and says, but David, Amos. Now, did David really know when midnight really was? I mean, come on. Hashta Moshe Rabbeinu lahava yada. Moshe himself didn't know when midnight was. And how do you know that? Because it says, Dechsid, the pasuk says, when Moshe came. Okay. When Moshe came to Paro, and he warned him about the last of the Eser Makos, so he said, you know, it's going to be at midnight. And Moshe told him, Kechatzos Laila. At around midnight, Aniyotze Besoch Mitzrayim, God said, at around midnight, I'm coming to pass through Egypt. So, now, my kachatzos. Now, what did it mean when Moshe told Paro that Hashem said, at around midnight, kachatzos? Now, Ilema de Amrlei Kutchabrichu, if you're going to tell me that that's what God said, kachatzos, that God told Moshe, I'm coming in at about midnight, so, me ikasvik kamishmaya, could you possibly think that Hashem himself didn't know what midnight was? That's ridiculous. So obviously, you can't assume that the suffix of about approximately midnight originated with Hashem. Rather, must have been, Ella, damar le, b'chatzos. God must have told him, b'chatzos. I'm coming, you know, at the strike of 12. I'm coming through Egypt. They better be ready. V'asa ihu, but then Moshe came on the scene, v'amar k'chatzos. He waffled and he said, you know, around midnight. Alma, so therefore, mispikalei, it must be that Moshe himself was not exactly sure when midnight fell. And if that's true, but David Avayanda, how possibly could David have known when midnight was? Okay? Now, I have a funny answer to this. Don't laugh at me. If someone else told me this, I would laugh at them. But anyways, but I was just thinking about it before we go any further in the Gemara. This is a funny answer. That we had seen in the previous circle, we said that what happens at midnight? At midnight, the dogs bark. But the pasuk says that one night, the dogs didn't bark when Hashem went through Egypt. So maybe the pshat is, there's a go there. It's like, this is kind of, it's not meant to be a joke, even though it's kind of silly, in a way. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. But I have a simple answer, which the Gemara doesn't go that route. It says, that would be, listen, every night, the dogs bark at midnight. They didn't bark that midnight, so someone couldn't know. But every time in David did know, everyone could know, because the dogs are barking.
That he was going to come.
Okay, so maybe Hashem knew, or Moshe knew, that the dog wouldn't bark that night. Hashem promised Moshe, not even a dog will wag its tongue. So, like, yeah. Anyways, it's funny. No. If you remember, there was 2 months armor. How to understand the three, but it was three. It was the month number of three. Remember, it was the middle of the middle one. In any case, that's funny. Maybe you bring it from right from there that it's taka like the three, and not like the. Okay, anyways, I didn't mean to be a joke, but it's kind of a silly answer. It's, I don't know.
Also, I learned that the reason Hashem said to Moshe was about midnight is because of the Egyptians.
We're getting there. Yes, you heard it from here. Don't worry. Yeah, we heard it from there. Yeah, but I'm just advancing that answer because, I don't know, just, I thought of it, and I don't know why, like, no one suggested it. Anyways, that's that. Anyways, the question on the table is, how in the world could Moshe know? How could David know if Moshe didn't know? So the answer, of course, is, hey, you haven't heard of an alarm clock before? All right? What's the problem? David knew, because he had an alarm clock, just like that. It says, David Samana Havale. David had set up a mechanism to notify him. He had a sign that let him know when it was midnight. Damar of Acha Bar Bizna, Amar of Shimon Chasida. Kinor, there was like a kinor is like a probably translated best as, after my further research, as a lyre, L-Y-R-E. I know, is it translated as harp there? Oh, harp? Okay, so I'm back in the question mark. I fell this trap. We discussed it in Sukkah. But when I looked into it further, I got the impression that the kinor is talking like an early guitar, so to speak, as opposed to a harp. And a nevel is a harp. I'm afraid to go back and look further. But anyways, okay, so David had the string instrument hanging up over his bed, havatoli lamala mimitaso, dangling over his bed. Shel David. V'kiven she'egia chatzos lila, when midnight showed up, baruch tafonis, a northern wind arrived, v'noshevas bo, and it blew it. U'menagin elav, and that made the strings, you know, chime, and David woke up. That was his alarm clock.
It's not his sinai, it's Minashamayim.
So, now, there's different ways of learning this. Rashi learns that he brings sources that the winds change at different times of the day, and this is nothing, it's just Teva. He just basically set up like a wind chime, essentially. When the wind, he put the holes in such a way of the kinor that when the wind would finally start blowing north, which happened at midnight, would start ringing the moving the strings and waking them up. That's how Rashi learns. There are others who want to learn. There was a nace, a special nace was done for David on every night. He was like woken up at midnight by the magical winds. I mean, because talk precision again. Yeah, but when does it blow? Does it blow at exactly strike of midnight every night? They were looking for a midnight alarm clock, 12:00. So, Rashi learns, it's like that. Rashi learns that the wind changes direction at midnight. And, I mean, the winds do blow in opposite directions during the course of the day, depending on where it's high and low or low pressure, based on hot and low, hot and cold. But, so Rashi learns this Derech HaTeva set up. And I guess the implication that will be that David didn't rely on an ace, and so on. That'll be not communist. Others learn, Yaros, Devash, and others, that it was an ace. Like, David had a special miracle happen to get up at midnight. The Rashba brings, in the name of Rav Hai Gon, this is really interesting. Rav Hai learns that David had set up a good old-fashioned alarm clock. Said it had a mechanism. Rav Hai says, I don't know what it's made of exactly. Maybe it's water, maybe it's wind. But the point is he had a clock set up, just like a sana, but a mechanical clock. And it would, at midnight, strike on the mechanism would work such that it would strings would ring and wake them up, but it was a mechanical clock. Fascinating. And so it wasn't fine. Okay, so those are different approaches. And either way, David got up at midnight because he had an alarm clock, right? And that's how we knew, as opposed to Moshe didn't know. That's what Mar learns for now. Now, fine. So we got David getting up at midnight with his alarm clock. So we say, Miyad, as soon as the chime went, Haya Omen Ba'osek B'Torah. David would get up and learn Torah. Right? Ad Shiala Amad HaShachar. Until dawn. Now, I'll point out to you, we had three opinions before exactly what David's nighttime schedule was. Now, one of the three, Ravashi, learned that until for the first half of the night he learned Torah, and the second half of the night he would get up to praise Hashem. So this is going to be very difficult for him, because here it says, at midnight he got up to learn Torah. How are we going to square that away? So, sometimes the question is better than the answer, but of course there are answers given. Some answers given are either that David Melech's Lahodos, David Melech's, you know, tale that he sang, that is a din of Torah. I mean, true after all, they came our Psalms. So that's one approach. Another approach is that which is interesting, the Shkafic approach, that it says when Hashem, he got up to praise Hashem, what was he was being, Akum Lahodos Lach, Al Mishpatei Tzedkecha, I got up to praise you for your Torah. And therefore, maybe, coveted Torah or appreciating Torah, I mean, we magda that, is the chelik of Torah itself, which may talk will be true. Like, for example, you see in every Hilchos Talmud Torah, they always put coveted Torah in there. Coveted Torah is a din, actually precedes Talmud Torah, and if you have a choice in coveting Chabad Torah or Shamash or Talmud Chacham, you're supposed to learn yourself, so that gets Kadima. So it could well be that this is his, that is a din of Talmud Torah by praising Hashem for a Torah. Either way, sometimes you think the question is better than the answer. But, that's that. So he got up and he was Osek B'Torah Adshiyala Amadashachar until the morning. Now begins a digression. It says, Kivan She'ala Amadashachar, once dawn showed up, Nichnasu Chachmei Yisrael Eitzvo. You know, the wise men of Israel showed up, you know, his advisors, the cabinet, showed up at his door. And now they're going to start asking questions. And the question will be very specific questions. They're going to say, Amrulo, they said to him, Adoneinu HaMelech, our master, the king, Amcha Yisrael Tzrichim Parnasa. You know, your people need Parnasa. Amr Lahem, so he said to them, L'chu v'es Parnasu Zumizu. So they should support one another. I'm going to go back. I just want to get the full thought here. Amrulo, they said to him, Eina Kometz Masbiya Asari. They said a Kometz, which is a little mount, can't satisfy a lion. Then a bur mismalam mechul yosav, and a pit can't be filled up from its own dirt. I'll go back and explain all the story here. Amr Lahem, so he said, Lachu pashi yadeichem bigdud. He said, okay, fine, go make a war. Now, it's essentially inconceivable to say this happened every morning. The way the Gemara was started, it said, like, this is how David's nights went. Every night he had the kinar set up, he woke up at midnight, he learned Torah, and then, like every morning, they showed up and said the same story that they need pronouncing to go make him the war. Obviously not. So many learn. I saw the art scroll learned, like Palmacha says one time it happened. This one happened. Yeah, maybe the Pashuk shot. I don't know. It's hard to read that in as much as the Gemara doesn't flow that way. So I'm not sure what to make of it.
But maybe it's just saying that he had, like, he was the head of the state. So maybe he had like cabinet meeting.
Yeah, so certainly that is true. In other words, it sounds to be saying this is his Seder Yom. When dawn showed up, then the cabinet meeting happened. The problem is then what happens with the next sentence, what line the Gemara says, they had a specific issue to deal with. It's hard to imagine that specific issue and making a war happen every morning. Just, so it seems like an old Groundhog Day again and again and again. So some learn just that this is a one-off event that happened, we're illustrating the points. Could be, I'll suggest a possible other approach, which is, it's not a history book here, I'm not telling you a particular, we're trying to give you a picture of what the Melech Yisrael does, and what he's supposed to be doing, what he's supposed to care about, so it's painting a picture for you. And so, like, the issue, sorry?
A day in the life of.
Yeah, exactly, and it's supposed to be indicative, so it's telling you, like, when dawn comes, it's time to, your Melech Yisrael, like, to worry about people, the economy, and people's parnasa, and the poor people, like, that was the agenda. Those are the items that belong on the agenda of the king during the daytime. And this is one might to illustrate the point. It's going to be indicative. It's going to tell you, like, rules about war and so on. But in any case, yeah, that's the end of it. Let me go back and just break it up piece by piece here. So they come and the Chachmei Yisrael say to him, Amcha Yisrael tzrichim parnasa. Your people need parnasa. Now, how the Mefarshim seem to learn this is that the poor people need to be supported. Not, it doesn't. They don't learn it as being like the economy's failing. That's not the angle. The angle here in the Gemara seems to be based on Tosfos, Rashi, and so on, is that like there are poor people that need a parnasa, and what's going to be? So he said. So he says to them, "Well, why can't lechu this parnasu zumizu?" Which they all seem to understand to mean Rashi and Tosfos, the majority understand that it's. Essentially, why don't you take from the rich and give to the poor? That's his answer, loosely speaking. Amrlo, so they said to him, that's not going to work, because first of all, ain't a kometz masbiya esari. A kometz, most learned it's from the word like kamitza, like, which is when you give a meal offering, you take like three fingers worth of the mincha and put it on the mizbeach, and the rest get eaten. So the point is just it fits there in your finger. It's like a minuscule amount, so kometz, a very little amount. Other portion I want to say, the word kamta in Aramaic means like a locust, like one of these kosher insects. So the point is that one little kosher insect isn't going to satisfy the lion. Either way, the point of the message is that there isn't enough to go around, and if you tax the rich, there won't be enough. That tax won't be able to satisfy the needs of the poor. And not only that. Then a second part of the story, a second, it's hard to see the exact relationship here, but also, the Be'en Habur, a pit, cannot be mismalek, cannot be filled mefuli yosav, from its sand, ostensibly. Now, Rashi seems to say what seems reasonable, but Tosfos doesn't learn Rashi how I would learn Rashi. Let me read you Rashi, let me tell you Tosfos, we can figure it out for ourselves. But Rashi says, Eina bor mismala mechul yosav. A pit can't be filled from its sand. So it says haoker chulia mebor. If a person digs up sand from a pit Karui, that's been dug already. That's how I read the word dug already. Rosh Pasa Tosfos will learn that. But Karui means dug, a dog pit. V'chozer, and then he puts it back in. U'mashlicho, like he goes and throws the dirt back inside the hole. He just dug the hole out of it. Ein mismala b'kach. It won't get filled that way. So, this is how Tosfos, those words, which I can't tell you what it sounds like because it's not a Tosfos learned, but it sounds like you have a hole. If you want to fill it up, you can't dig from the bottom of the hole and put sand back in. It's not going to get you anywhere. But Tosfos doesn't understand this in Rashi. I don't know really why. Tosfos learns, he says, Pirush Rashi, he kind of puts words in Rashi's mouth. Sounds like Rashi explains, this is the last Tosfos Amma there. He says, Im yachpor, if you dig a hole, the yachzer bo afro, and then you put the dirt that you dug out of the hole back into the hole, lo yeh male, it won't become full the second time. Like when you take, it sounds like Tosfos is saying, I'm putting words in his mouth, that Rashi means if you have a flat ground, you dig a hole, you make a pile, you move the whole dirt back in the pile, it won't fill it up anymore. I know. So I don't understand. First of all, I understand why Tosfos wants to have a strange shot. Rashi seems very straightforward to me. Second of all, I don't even think it's like, and if he has a strange shot in Rashi, so he asks, he then starts asking from Rashi that what possibly is the mushel then? What's the mushel? Like the poor people are the dirt, and like how does it work? What are you trying to say? What's the mushel? Digging a hole and putting it back into itself. And anyways, and stop that. As you're saying, I don't. If you actually try it yourself at home and you dig a hole in the ground, because it's very densely packed. Once you aerate it and you unpack it, it'll become a mound. You have to pack it down to get in. So I don't know what to make of this Tosfos really. Anyways, but I hesitate. He's Tosfos. I'm looking at it, and he's. It's Rabbeinu Tam. In any case, so then Rabbeinu Tam has a different answer. And Rabbeinu Tam's understanding is, I'll come back to Rashi in a second, but Rabbeinu Tam's explanation is, which I think is even way more duffel, he says that what we're talking about here is the water inside the pit. Yes, it said chulio, which means sand. I don't know what to make of that. Rabbeinu Tam basically says, you know, if you have a pit, it's a well, and it's not full all the way, so you can't draw water out of the well and then put it back in and hope the well gets filled up. That will work, you know. It's like a water table. Obviously, the water is the level of where all the water is because you pull out. You know, it's like a... Like you're, you know, like a toilet. If you know when you pour more water in, it stays the same level because there's like a water pressure keeps it where it is. So it's not gonna get fuller or less full if you start drawing water out. That's how Rabbeinu Tam learns. And the Ri learns like how I would have thought Rashi's saying. The Ri says what it means is if you have a pit and you take sand from this side and you put it to that side, it won't get full that way. So you're shuffling sand to and from. It really sounds like Rashi to me also. Rashi sounds like he's taking sand at the bottom, putting it back in, it won't go anywhere. It's still just net at the bottom. Anyways, that's how they learn it. And therefore, David says, okay, since we need plan B now, I'm putting in my 2 cents here for a second. All that said, they're focusing on feeding, taking from the rich and giving to the poor. That's their issue here. It sure sounds to me like this is going through classic problem of there are poor people in society. And the question, like, why do you have to have two mashalim? Like, why do you have to have, what's the difference between the Ari and the Kometz and the poor and the, like, what? So it sounds to me, and I'm at the risk of sounding like I'm a 21st century person looking at the Gemara and stepping it in, it sounds to me that they tell you, David, you gotta, there's poor people in society, they're not making it, what are you gonna do? So he suggests what we would call socialism. He says, okay, fine, so tax the rich and give something to the poor, right? You know, have a graduate tax system, I don't know, you know, distribute the wealth, and then people will be okay. And the answer is, that's not gonna cut it, because the Ari won't be must be with the Kometz. Like the needs are great, and there's just a little bit supreme off the top, and so that's not gonna, you know, a little bit of, you know, a little taxation ain't going to do it. There's too many poor people, not enough rich people. It won't work. So then it sounds to me like the second unspoken thing is, okay, then forget a little social, you know, a little taxation, like communism, just like, you know, everyone get equal amounts, and then the Gemara answers, which is how Rashi seems to be, how I'd have learned Rashi, is like, if you already have a pit and there's not enough to go around, so then shoveling dirt around won't get it, it's still a net imbalance. If the, you know, per capita GDP of the whole society isn't enough for all the people, so who cares how you reallocate it, it's not enough to go around. So even a total redistribution of wealth still won't work. Therefore it says, okay, let's look without ourselves, go push your day and b'gdud, go make a war and bring more capital into the economy. That's how, as an economist myself, that's how I can't help but read the Gemara there, sorry to tell you. In any case, so that's the Gemara. So he says, now, go stretch out your hand and make a war. So that sounds a little not very PC. So he says the word gedud, which means like against the battalions. And before, I want to explain, and you see actually in the very sugya I mentioned before about David attacking with the word, the neshef pasuk, about him attacking from night to night or whatever. But the Amalekim were running amok in town, and there were other also Canaanite nation hadn't been wiped out yet. So he said, listen, so go attack them, get rid of them, and take what's left behind for us, which they were allowed to do. I don't know if they're allowed to do it by the Amalekim, by the way. But, right, Shaul tried that, that's big trouble. But anyways, you know, basically get rid of the Canaanites that are around that we have to get rid of anyways, and take the spoils of war, and then we'll be able to have more to give to the poor people. That's his suggestion. Okay. Oh, there you go. That's nice. That's nice. He said if they would have just given this first suggestion was let everyone give stuff, let the rich people support the poor people. So he said if that would have worked because that would have made like the schus of it would be that Hashem would make it work out for everyone, you know, Hashem would make bracha and it would go good. But since they wouldn't do it like through tzedakah, so they didn't have to go to the outside, you know, to their own hands and blood warfare. I like that. Okay, very good. So that's that. Anyways, back inside now. So what's next? So once David says, okay, we're going to war, so they have a process now. It says, Yo'atzim b'Achitofel, the first move, David said, go to war. Okay, we got to consult with Achitofel. Achitofel was David's advisor. You know, we'll see later, he was a tremendously strategic person, maybe not a good person, we'll see, but he was a bad person, but a treacherous person, but he was very, very shrewd. So the first move was to speak to Achitofel. He was David's chief of staff, a lead advisor, to ask him how to make the war. Like, what strategically, what should we do? Who should we attack? Where? How? And so on. Then, step two, once they have the strategy of what they're going to do, Nimlachim B'Sanhedrin. Then you have to consult Sanhedrin to get their approval. Now, it's very interesting. The order here is very strange. You know, first you're making how you can do it, then you speak to the Sanhedrin. But it's even more strange in as much as you look at Rashi. Rashi is looking at the consultant Sanhedrin not for their permission, only because as a political move to get them to daven for you. That's what he says, right? Rashi says, Nimuchu b'Sanhedrin, consult the Sanhedrin, no l'mehem rishus, get their permission. Why? K'dei shi'ispalu, so that they should pray aleihem, that they should pray on behalf of the soldiers. So it sounds like Rashi's learning that the first move is to go to the strategists, want to make a military decision. Then you don't want to irritate the rabbis, you better get them on side so they can daven for you, do their support on a roughly level. That's what it sounds like. Very not. Yeah?
This is the whole plan and how we plan this.
Okay, but, I guess you could say that, but I'll just read you the words of Rashi again and. They certainly, to me, scream not like that. It says, Nimuchu b'Sanhedrin, which means like, you know, consult with them. Consult with Sanhedrin, which Rashi says, Notlin mehem rishus, get their permission, k'day, in order that, she is palo aleihem, that they'll daven for you.
Maybe daven
on A step two, after you've gotten to the war.
Maybe daven about the plan, that you go with the plan.
Okay, that's what he suggests. You got to go with Sanhedrin with the plan. Fine. And third step is v'sholim b'urim b'tumim. And after that happens, after you got the bracha and the approval of the Sanhedrin, then you got to consult with the urim b'tumim to let you know if it's going to work out or not. That's the last step. Once they say that the urim b'tumim say it's going to work, then you can go to war. Now, just a second here. What are the urim b'tumim? You hear about them talked about, but what in the world are they? This is actually the reason why. Like really no one knows really, is because there aren't instructions in the Chumash how to make them, or make it. So unlike pretty much everything else, which is at very fine detail, the Urim and Tumim are left as a question mark. So Rashi learns, which is probably Rashi, that there was this Choshen, this breastplate, and the front of it had these 12 stones with all the names of the tribes on it, and inside, like there's like a flap, it opened up, but inside the flap, there was a parchment with the Shem Hashem in it that was written in a fancy way that Moshe had to do from Hashem. And it was closed in, and that kind of was like the battery that powered up these 12 stones so that you could ask them questions, and they would spell it, the globe and spell it answers. As a side point, the Bavli on Yomam Gimel says, like, wait a second, 12 tribes' names don't have all the letters in the alphabet. You're missing a couple, right? So the Bavli speaks that you're missing two, you're missing a Tzadi in the test, so that's not good. And Yerushalmi says, oh, you're not just Tzadi in the test, you're also missing Kuf in the test. So you got a lot of missing letters there. So the Gemara on Gimel Yoma says that not only did it have the 12 Shevatim on it, it also had Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, as well as Shiftei Yeshurun, the tribes of, it's called the tribes of Israel, Yeshurun's another name, right? And there was all stuffed on the letters there. How many learn is that, works out that each of the 12 stones had six letters on them. So what happens, basically just went in order. In other words, for example, the first stone was Reuven. Reuven is only five letters long. Resh, Aleph, Vav, Beis, Nun. So then you have one extra letter there. So you put Avram. That's the Aleph from Avram showed up over there. It was like Reuven, Aleph. And then for Shimon, again, you have five letters. So you got the Beis for Avram. And then Levi, only three letters. You have three more letters to go to get the six. So that's the rest, the last letters of Avram's name. Anyways, that's the Urim and Tumim, and it will glow up. So Rashi learns it's like a Urim and Tumim are like the battery pack behind it. Why it's plural? Good question. You can learn whatever. I mean, there are answers, of course. Yeah.
One part of Urim and another part of Tumim.
No, according to Rashi, the Urim and Tumim is the life force, the parchment behind it. And it's called. There's a drush there in Yoma why they're called Urim and Tumim. Okay, but anyways. Right? Now, the Ritva learns that the reason why there's no instructions is because whatever the Urim and Tumim are, that came from Hashem himself. You don't make it. They didn't make it. It's like some, whatever it is, magic battery that you stuck inside. So what it was, like, who knows? And it's not our, it was like a thing that Hashem put into it. The Rabbeinu Avram and Rambam, and maybe the Rambam too, a little ambiguous, learns that the stones themselves are called the Urim and Tumim. There's no extra battery pack. They light up when you talk to them. No, you know, battery is not included because they're not required. And they're plural because Urim and Tumim, they're the things themselves. Most interestingly, the Ibn Ezra learns that the Urim and Tumim were these little, like, figurines, like gold or silver thingies that they would consult. But of course, the Ramban pulls his hair out screaming and shouting, how could that possibly be? They're consulting idols in a way. But in any case, so bottom line is, whatever the Urim and Tumim are, I don't know, but they were. The answers came out through the breastplate. So the last thing they do is they consult with the breastplate, the stones on it, to say, will we or will we not succeed in this war? So now, the Gemara asks, Amar Rav Yosef Mikra, what's the pasuk that says you do it in this weird order? Because I think it's looking for a pasuk because of the reason that I was kind of pointing to, which is it's like a really, it seems like a very weird order of doing things. So bring a pasuk. The pasuk is, this is a pasuk from Divrei Yamin. It says, V'achri Achitofel, after Achitofel, Achitofel the divider, Benayo ben Yoyada, and Benayo ben Yoyada was the Avesin, he was like this head of Sanhedrin. So that's Sanhedrin. And then the Avesar was the Kohen Gadol, and he's the one who wears the Urim and Tumim, right? So, that's the three steps. And finally, the Sar Tzava, Lemelech Yoav, and then comes the Sar Tzava, which is like the minister of minister of the army of the king, Yoav. Yoav was like the, you know, he did the war itself. So that is the pasuk. Now, this pasuk is like a very, this drush is very challenging. It's a can of worms. First of all, the actual pasuk V'achri Achitofel means, and their Dibur Yom says, after Achitofel died, then came onto the scene these two people, which makes the drush very hard to understand. On top of that, if you look actually in the pasukim, it doesn't say Benayahu ben Yoyada, it says Yoyada ben Benayahu. Anyways, I can't help with all those problems, really. There are answers. Whatever, is this a drush or the pasuk? You can start over there. So that they learn out from the pasuk that is the order of events. And now we prove that who's who. We say, V'atas Achitofel, this is the Achitofel is a yatz. Achitofel is the yoetz, he's the advisor. As we see here, the pasuk says, I don't know if it actually has Uka Hai Amrina, maybe? Uksuv Hachi Amrina? What's that for? V'chein Hu Omer? Yeah, maybe, of a pasuk. Okay, I don't know. V'chein Hu Omer? Fine. So, what does it say? What does someone have English now? What does it say? What is it? What is it? What's it? V'chein Hu Omer? Okay. Fine. Just maybe that's what the. Yeah, fine. V'chein Omer, and so similarly, it's he, the pasuk says. But this is a pasuk from Shmuel. We're talking about what happened was Achitofel basically sided with Avshalom in the rebellion, and David was panicked, and he made a special prayer that his Eitzah should not be listened to, because that would have been the death knell for David, because Achitofel was so smart. And talk about it, that's what happened, that Avshalom ignored Achitofel. Anyway, so the pasuk itself, Hashem, as it were, testified, saying, "V'atzas Achitofel, Achitofel's counsel, Asher Yatz B'yam Mahem, when he would give advice in those days, Kasher Yishal B'dvar Elkim, as if you've asked God directly, not like that. So, He was serious. So that is Achitophel was the Yowetz. That's the step one, the military strategist, the advisor. Then, step number two, Benyahu ben Yoyada. That was a Sanhedrin. Because he was the Abesin, fine. The Avesar, he was the Kohen Gadol. He was the Kohen Gadol until nearly the end. Once Avshalom rebelled.
Wait, is this a
He's the Abesin. He's a symbol of it. He's an allusion to him. Right? But Avesar, he was Elu Ur Metumim. He's Ur Metumim because Avesar was the Kohen Gadol. Until then, after Avshalom rebelled, actually, then the Ur Metumim wouldn't answer Avesar anymore, and then Tzadok HaKohen took over as the Kohen Gadol. In any case, V'chenu Omer, and you bring up, oh, sorry, Taka. V'chenu Omer, for sure. You have a pasuk here. Benyahu ben Yoyada. Al Kreisi Vela Plesi. So the Rashi learns it means you have Benayal Ben Yoyada, that was the Sanhedrin, and then after that, the Kreisi and Plesi. Kreisi and Plesi are another word for Ur Metumim, says Rashi. Although Tosfos says, no way, Kreisi and Plesi is referring to the Sanhedrin. Either way, we'll explain those words in just a moment here. It says, Belomanikra Shmam Kreisi and Plesi. Why are they called the Kreisi and Plesi? Whether according to Rashi it's the Ur Metumim or Tosfos, it's the Sanhedrin. They're Kreisi. That doesn't mean anything particular, those words, but crazy, they're called crazy, shekorsin divrayim. Kores means like to like cut short, like cut a, like krisos, kores. So they're cut short, because their words are like, you know, defined and no extra words and very short and to the point. And placey, from the word pela, shemuflaim, to divrayim. They were like amazing in their words. They were like a pela, transcendent or remarkable, whatever it is. And according to Tosfos, that's a reference to the Sanhedrin. Either way, after that, the Mishnah Drasha finalizes by saying "va'achar kach." And after that, once you consult with these three steps, right, the advisor followed by the Sanhedrin, followed by the Urim Metumim, then "va'achar kach" starts the Ba'melech Yoav. Then you take with the approval and the green light to give it to the, you know, to the general, who's Yoav, to take the war. Fine. Amar v'Yitzchak bar Ada. We're going back to our original question here about midnight. Yeah, that's where we're getting back to midnight. We're wrapping up here. It says, Amr Yitzchak bar Ada, Va'amrila, Amr Yitzchak Bray, Rav Idi, Maikra. What's a pasuk that you learned that double got up at Chatzos and had this, and had by using this, this fancy alarm clock? Because the pasuk says, Ura Kvodi, awaken my honor. The flash that's referring to him talking to himself, like to his neshama. Ura Nevo Vakinor, Va'ir Shachar. Sorry, Ayir Shachar. You know, arise the Nevel and the Kinor, the lyre and the harp, or harp and lyre, and I will awaken the dawn. So you see, that's the pasuk telling you David Taka got up with the use of his Kinor. Reb Zera, Amar, back to the question about Chatzos now. He says, Moshe Lolam Habiyada. We are talking about that? Let me finish the sentence. I think we should. Reb Zera, okay, fine, we'll stop there.